Water.
Earth.
Fire.
Air.
Welcome to Bending the Elements.
A production by the Novice Elitist Podcast.
With your hosts, Caleb and Isaac.
Podcast about all things Avatar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, those between and affiliated to Bending the Elements, an Avatar podcast by us, the Novice Elitists, your hosts, Caleb and Isaac. Today, we are here to talk about another episode of Netflix's The Avatar Last Airbender series. Caleb, how are you doing at the moment?
I'm pleased that not only are we doing another episode of Netflix Avatar, we're doing the penultimate episode as we arrive at the North. And I remember we talked earlier on, we were like, oh, you know, maybe they'll have a chance, because when we did the first season, our first book of the animated Avatar, we were kind of like, oh, you know, the end three-parter, maybe it would have been better if it was an end four-parter. Like, there was some stuff here that could have used some time to be fleshed out a little bit more. And I guess doing two episodes of this live action series when the episodes are like 50 minutes long or 45 minutes long, I guess two episodes is kind of what we were hoping for, right? That's kind of four episodes of the animated show.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. I guess the question is, were you satisfied or not?
Yes. Well, before we get into that, I guess we'll do a little bit of our background stuff. I'll say this one was written by Audrey Wong Kennedy. And it looked like this was the only episode that she'd done for this season. So, and it was directed by Jet Wilkinson. And we'll see Jet next episode because they also direct the last one, Legends. So we'll see them again.
What's their backgrounds?
Well, I guess the Jet director has a little bit of experience with this kind of fantasy television because she worked on the new Percy Jackson and the Olympians TV series that's out, which I really don't know anything about. She also directed some stuff for the Marvel television stuff. She worked on Jessica Jones, Punisher, and Daredevil. So,
oh, a Netflix alum. Nice.
Yeah, it looks like she's been doing a lot of stuff with Netflix, actually. But yeah, and then Audrey Wong Kennedy. This is a brand new job for her. She's a staff writer on this show. This is her solo writing credit, just as the one credit writer. But yeah, she's a first-time writer on this gig. She really hasn't done anything else, so.
Very nice.
Yeah, so, yeah, I guess we'll see how her work stands up in the North. And I guess we can open up this episode proper by giving our best thing, worst things, and are we feeling this whole shtick that we stole from Geekvolution? Homage to Geekvolution.
If they want to sue us, they can. I don't mind. I say I don't mind. It's just to get noticed.
We'll settle it at court.
It's just I've been doing this the whole time just so that, you know, I could say, notice me, senpai Captain Logan.
That's fair. No, but take it away. Take the first stab at the whole shtick.
Well, if I had to reel in my fishing rod, even though I don't fish, I have a low feeling it.
And how about best thing?
A certain character who I predicted beforehand actually was who they said they were, or actually turned out to be who they said they were, I was right!
Nice. Well, yeah, I want to jump into that, but I'll wait after your worst thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, that's... Well, but then I gotta ask you your best, worst, and your sign. Worst thing, goodness gracious me. It felt fast. It felt like the whole, like, plot at the Fortress was going like pretty fast. Now it's a nitpick. It's not a like terrible like this thing sucks, but just it felt really fast. Like we were trying to like move in like a city, but kind of like when we did the last Underworld movie.
Yeah, I'll say my where I'm at with the flip my sign. Yeah, if the last episode had me on the other end of the meter, this one had me inching back towards the neutral category. Not fully back. I think my I was so pleased with that last episode that I can give some grace to this one, and they continue some elements that I like quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it just, it did feel like there was just too much going on, and it didn't feel like they really took the time to breathe enough. A couple moments they did. And for my best thing, it's similar to yours, but I guess not fully the same, but it is Amber Midthunder's performance as a UA. I just thought she was charming. I like this actress from Prey, and I can't remember what else. Really. I think there's one other thing.
Oh, so it's the Prey girl. Okay, interesting. Or woman, sorry.
Yeah, and I was surprised to see her in this, and I found her quickly charming. So in her dynamic with Sokka, ladies' man Sokka, he has a girl in every town, as we always made jokes of.
Happy harem to him.
Yeah, I thought that was sold well. I was enjoying that quite a bit. I like Han too, but maybe I'll save that for a little bit later.
We'll get to him eventually.
Yeah, worst thing, this isn't fair. It's yeah, not maybe not my real worst thing. But A. Martinez as Master Paku, I think the casting was okay, but it just the look, oh boy. It looks like he's got like a fake extension to his head on this bald cap. They got like the thickest bald cap ever. And then his hairline's like way down. I was like, this is the ultimate looks off cosplay that we've seen in this season so far.
Yes. I kind of figured that. I'm not saying the actor is bald. I'm assuming he's got like a full mane of hair, or just unlike some of the other characters, he decided to not like cut his hair for this role.
That could be, you know, everything else I've seen him in, he does tend to have pretty puffy hair on the top. So maybe that's it. Yeah, maybe it just looked off for that reason. But yeah, no, that did not work for me.
It's the opposite problem of that that one character in Return of the Jedi where he's supposed to have that fake beard because his toy, the toy of his character has a beard.
Oh.
We brought that up before. You remember that.
Yeah, maybe I'm forgetting. But yeah, no, I think that's where I'm at. Yeah, still in the feeling it side, but yeah, like you said, in the lower tier. But still plenty of positives to talk about, and I'm excited to get into some of them as we get into this thing.
I mean, you know, treating each episode as episode by episode. I'm not gonna just, you know, give. Yeah, I'm not gonna like all of a sudden and I'm out. Like, no, judging each episode by what it's trying to give us. So. Okay, so we finally are at the North Pole. Wow, that was quick. Sorry, just looking at the thinking back to stuff anyway. Nostalgia. But let's begin. Yue being a waterbender and Yue having access to the spirit world and projecting herself as a fox. Goodness gracious me. Not just because I was right, but I love it. Because I like that they expanded her character to actually be a waterbender.
Yeah, and I like the element with her having a, like, as I guess in this one, Avatar Kurik has a bit of a, like, people kind of look back at him as like a failed avatar. Like he abandoned the human world to just focus on the spiritual stuff, and it sounds like he's gotten a bad reputation. I like how that factors into her and her being like quick to defend him, and be like, no, I think he must have had some reason. And I've been trying to learn about that, so it makes me wonder if that's why she spent so much time in her dreams as a spirit running around too, to try to learn about his past.
And I'm gonna jump to him eventually, but just to gush with Yue, and
yeah,
I don't know, they didn't do this, but I probably would have. I wish she trained Katara. I straight up wish that. Okay,
oh,
you know, both the men and the women, and we'll get into that in this episode, thankfully. Both like the male elders and the female elders will not teach me. I wish Yue kind of like nudge to Katara, like, hey, like here's some moves that I've been secretly training or doing, because, you know, they don't obviously say it in this episode, but or not this episode, but just because of the miracle, basically. I wish that was the case, and then Katara would therefore teach Aang, but obviously didn't do it, whatever, doesn't matter, but I like her a lot.
Yeah. No, yeah, the chemistry with Sokka is great. I think the look is good, and yeah, we'll get into it in the second part, but yeah, no, I think there's a lot of really, really nice improvements, or maybe not, I wouldn't say improvements, but different variations that makes this UA stand out on her own, and yeah, it's a highlight for this two-parter, her presence, and I Yeah, it's I think it was a shame in the original show too that it was kind of like, oh, you know, this is a character that I liked and I wish we could get more of them. I feel like it's even more of a shame here that we're losing Amber Midthunder in these two episodes, because yeah, I was really getting attached.
To... Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So now let's go to Han.
Han, this, I mean, maybe I can't fully remember how they presented the Han character. I think he was a little bit more cocky, a little bit more jealous.
Jerk. Complete and utter, like, oh yeah, I'm going to be royalty and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was that element of him just feeling superior, and him and Sokka just having kind of a little bit of like a toxic masculinity dynamic there between the two of them.
Oh, totally.
And we were both kind of like, yeah, like not super loving what he's putting down. I like this turn a lot better. I like this character he's already kind of processed even though he still would love to be with Yue, he's processed the fact that she rejected their betrothal and has this more noble kind of like, I'll still be a protector. I'll still serve my role to her in this, our city, but doesn't start a rivalry with Sokka just because he discovers the two of them sitting together. Like, you can tell that he notices it and he kind of registers like, oh, but maintains that respect, which I think is nice to see.
I agree. You know, what can I say? I just want to gush over his decisions, or at least, yeah, well, the way they took this character, especially the way they played with us. They played with when I say they played with my emotions, I'm pleased. I'm pleased to hear that they kind of tricked me into thinking that Han was going to go down this direction. I immediately came in with those. Again, I got to give the show this. I have to let it be its own thing. But there were those preconceived notions that I was bringing. I don't want to say baggage, but that was coming in from, you know, what it was adapting and saying, like, okay, is Han going to be this way? So this is the case where they went with, okay, so we know you all are aware of Han's jerkiness. And they actually go the same, almost down the same route. They say, because when he shows up to see Sokka and Yue, you know, just talking with each other, and they have that look.
Yep.
And by the way, yeah, you're right. That romance is right there. Just like Suki, again. The actor does a great job of almost having to fool, maybe not me, but fool. I'll just say this. He fooled me into thinking that he was jealous. And he saw oh, I see what's going on here. But he didn't say anything. And then next scene when we see Han asking Sokka to come talk about the battle armor and the differences, because we've never fought them before, I'm like, oh, this is where he's going to beat him up or say, no, you listen here, buddy. That's my girl, or something like that. And they didn't do that, and I was pleased.
Yeah, and I like that moment for Sokka too, because, I mean, you can tell that, you know, the both versions of Sokka, this one and the one in the animated show, have an element of an inferiority complex when it comes to other warriors, because he kind of knows that he's not the big cheese that he wishes that he was. And so I like that when Sokka's dealing with him, it's kind of like he's not on level ground until the guy's like, oh, you know, you've dealt with the Fire Nation recently. Can you give us some updates? You can tell that Sokka gets excited to be useful in that moment too. So again, we haven't had too many moments lately to highlight the performance of the actor portraying Sokka, but I've always liked what he's been doing. And yeah, he's just good with the romantic stuff. Good at selling just with facial expressions, the stuff that we know is going on in his head. I think he translates that well. And so I was happy to see him get more of a standout role in this episode than some of the previous ones.
I guess the reveal that, yeah, I guess, you know, Han was, as you said, betrothed to Yue since they were kids, and she was the one that broke it off. I got to give him that. He acted...
Yeah,
probably angry at first, but then again, yeah, just that acceptance of like, well, the cat's out of the bag now, or at least the secret's out. Not even the secret's out, but it's over now, and he just has to like. That's honestly, that makes me have sympathy for the character a lot. And again, it takes an actor. When I say an actor, not to throw him in the butt, but just like, I think the actor was spot on with his performance and portrayal of a man who has accepted this notion and this belief for quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah. And carries a good like responsibility to him. You can see it in the character, the way he holds holds that his own pain to relate to that, to while he's talking to Sokka, who's clearly, you know, like looking to be a new suitor. Like, I think he has that neutrality there. Like, he's holding back. I thought that was really well sold.
Oh yeah, no. And if there was jealousy with that, like, I get it. This time I get it. Like, you know,
yeah.
This was promised to him, and it doesn't seem like he's supposed to be a toxic masculine person. He's just, I think he does have feelings for Yue, and he just, yeah, he just can't pursue because she doesn't reciprocate back. So it's like, oh man, I actually feel for this character, man alive. So this is a character where they took a useless character, and I'm going to say, yeah, useless character in the show, and gave him purpose in this. I appreciate this change and welcome this so much. So he's tacked on with, you know, the fact that I love the fact that, you know, I was right with Yue being the fox spirit. I'm tacking him on as part of my best thing as well.
That's fair. Yeah. You know, that fox thing is really cool. And I like the way that they sprinkle through where early on Sokka's like, oh, there's something familiar about her. And Sokka's like, Katara's like, why do you keep staring at her? But then, like, she's just ignoring him until he looks away. And then we see her looking at him, too, and kind of smiling. And then once we get that scene when she reveals it and he gets so excited, like, I knew it. I thought that was a fun moment, too.
Deja vu. I've just been in this place before. Sorry. Before we go anywhere about the blowing up of Zuko, let's do Kirk, because, wow.
Oh, man.
We have to... We're in an interesting position because we've not done Korra yet.
Mm.
And some of his dealings with what he does and adaptational changes and anything that is brought from the comics, if any of this is from said comics. Wow. Holy smokes. Like, this adds a lot to at least what I was aware of from the original series, and only the original series, again, none of the extra canonical material, and or at least that's still part of the canon, but anything involving what they're talking about, the otherly presence, I'm gonna say, because I know this guy doesn't do a spoiler part of the show. Because this literally talks about Korra and we haven't done that yet. But just to say, like, he was involved with that. Okay. If they ever do Korra, because I was actually thinking of that the other day. It's like, so if this show, like, finishes, are they just going to go straight to Korra?
Oh, well, I never considered that at all. That's interesting.
I was thinking that. I was like, oh, are we going to do Korra? It's like, I guess, you know, now that I see this part of what Kirk was doing. Oh, man, that's... Yeah. So I'll say this. So he goes to... Yue shows Aang to one of his, like, quarters, I guess, or his, like, you know, area.
Yeah, shrine.
Thank you for his shrine. His hallowed place, his hallowed grounds. Aang goes in the spirit world like that. And I gotta say, the actor playing Kirk, yeah, I love his eyes. Golly gee, they got a guy with striking eyes. But there was something that I, you know, looking at it, yes, actually, like, on screen right now, thankfully. But one of the things that I'm a little bit disappointed by, it's not my worst thing, don't worry, but the one thing that I'm disappointed by is something I realized.
Hmm.
I'm thinking back to parts of, you know, Star Trek or, you know, TOS or just whatever, where we would have two characters act with each other. And I kind of noticed this as well with some of the other characters throughout this entire series. And maybe this is the same thing in the show, you could say, where, you know, they kind of did this to save animation because it would be really hard to do this. But they oftentimes just have the camera focused on the character's face and that's it. And we don't really see the actors move around and make motions. Now, maybe that doesn't seem perhaps, you know, correct or not correct, but appropriate for the characters. But I'm just remembering, you know, scenes where, you know, we would see like Jean-Luc Picard, he would like move around as he philosophized or as he made these speeches. But at least maybe you could say it kept the camera moving. And it's like, I kind of want to see more of that where I want to, like, I'm not saying I want to see these grand gestures, but maybe I am looking for a little more of theatricality in this because, you know, we're basing this off of an animated series. And that's another thing I feel is because I like the way the actor portrays Kirk very much so. And like the gravitas and the history he gives to him. But I'm like, I kind of want to see him like, again, if you, maybe I'm going back to theater, but just like, you know, you can't just speak it out. You have to, like, you know, shout out, you have to make body movements. And even, I don't know if you can't see me right now, but I'm putting my hands in the air, like just these grand gestures. And I kind of was hoping to see that from this. And that's one of the problems I have. And thankfully I've figured it out of why I'm a little bit disappointed with the series sometimes is that we don't have the, not that it's always necessary, I'm saying, but just we don't have, especially in these big scenes, we don't have these big grand gestures. And like with Kiyoshi or Roku and finally Kirk, we don't have that. We just have Aang standing just in front of his past self. And I'm like, we'd be a little bit more dynamic than static. Nothing is wrong with static, but I feel like the scene calls for dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was actually going to point a scene out similar in the next episode, so maybe I'll hold off, but no, I totally see what you mean. And yeah, I don't fully get why, but there is a lot of that just standing. So
just standing and talking, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I guess, like, you know, we like to, you know, maybe I am being a little bit like over exaggerated right now. I'm not asking for over exaggeration because that's what animation is and what you can do. I'm not like asking these guys to be over exaggerated, but I mean, I think what Yue does with her face, goodness gracious me, she's doing the right things there, where she's like, you know, she raises an eyebrow or two, she squints, she does this, like she's fully animated, but I like that. That's why I'm drawn to her character, because she's, the actor knows like what performance she's trying to give here.
Yeah, maybe after doing Prey, where there's almost no dialogue the whole movie, maybe she's just gotten that face acting down good.
I, by the way, haven't seen Prey, so I have no idea.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Avatar, Kirk, go.
Oh man, no, I get what you're saying, and I did feel a little bit of that, but yeah, just the presence that this actor brings, the really cool stuff that he's introducing and expanding out for the spirit world. Like just the scene alone when Yue was explaining, like, oh, you know, there's people there who feel like he left us to deal with issues that he could have helped with. And Aang's kind of like, oh, you know, he abandoned the role of the Avatar, and she quickly jumps to his defense. So I was curious what they're going to do with that. But then seeing that in some ways, it lent into some issues that I've had with this series, especially when it comes to Aang not having done any training at all in terms of waterbending.
Hey, Aang, when are you going to start learning waterbending?
Yeah, it was like Aang was just expecting Avatar Kuruk to possess him and solve the problem for him. And so I love the way that they go around that, where he's been so damaged by his wars his battles in the spirit world that it's like he can't make a stable connection. And I guess that's why he was spending so much time there, is he couldn't really come back. So a lot of really interesting expanding out. I'm fascinated to see what they do with that, if they do anything. But just the performance too.
If you remember in the old masters of, you know, the ending of Avatar, the original series, that was the only time they brought him out finally. And it's like, yeah, I kind of lived a little bit more relaxed, peaceful time in the world and had nothing much to burden. But you know, then we, you know, my fiance got her face taken off by our face, her co took her face off, and then I was, you know, pretty, you know, mad about that. This, they, again, the actor and the writers bring a lot more of a grandiose nature to Kirk, which I appreciate. And I guess make him a lot more, yeah, I guess not important, but we at least see more of what he did.
And I really like the way that they end that scene where he's kind of drilling into Aang, like, there's no Team Avatar, there's only the Avatar. You need to stop worrying about, you know, your friends and just put your role first above everything else. And then as Aang comes out of it, he overhears Sokka and Yue just flirting, and he kind of has this smile, but then this sad look of like, yeah, maybe it is time that I put away these childish things in a way.
And did you notice that scene was when in the original series Sokka gave her the carving of the fish?
Yes, I heard that.
Not the fish, but it's supposed to be like, wait, yeah. Is that a fish? It's like, no, it's supposed to be you.
I thought that was cute. Yeah, I like that.
Yes, as always. But I've not seen, I've actually literally not seen any memes about the show. I'm obviously not going to look for them and not going out of my way to look for them, excuse me. But I've not seen any accidental ones. when the actor says, like, there is no Team Avatar, I'm like, oh, that's a meme.
That's fair.
That is like an absolute meme right there. That's so funny how Aang is reliant on the Avatar state. That is so funny where,
yeah,
goodness gracious me, they can't even do the general, the Mad Earth General in like book two, season one, book two, episode one, of the Avatar state, where he wants to weaponize the Avatar state. This is Aang just being like, I'll just use the Avatar state to deal with all my problems. It's like, Is this kid going to learn waterbending at all? Because let's just say that he is now no match for Azula. She is going to kill that son of a gun. And like, it is going to be, she has earned her, like, you know, right to kill Aang over Aang doing anything at all.
I don't know about right.
That's not right, obviously, but I'm just mean, like, you know, the fact that she finally displayed, well, I say finally, but in the, in this build up to the whole series, it's Azula who's been the one that's, what is it? She's been, building her skills up and training hard. We'll get to that in a second. And then displays lightning at the end. It's like, no, she is, like, if anybody has problems with her beating Aang, it's like, no, she's done everything she could. Aang has done diddly squat. But,
well,
nobody, I guess nobody was pushing the whole Master of the Four. Well, I guess, no, they were. The avatars were, but he just didn't know where to start, which I guess I can relate to.
Yeah, and I think that what they were planning, I'm curious if they're going to do a minor time jump when we get into the second season.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think what they're doing with this, especially this last episode, but throughout the whole season, is we constantly saw Katara training. And so they were kind of building her up to be in the position to be Aang's master. So, yeah, in that way, I think they've done a solid job. We do see her continuously improving. We see her working at it a lot. There was a couple times when just in the background, you'd see her training. And I think they even used that for a plot point at one point. Is she was training on her own, and then that's how she discovered the Mechanist.
Yep.
So they've utilized that well, and that feeds into this episode, and I guess we can talk about that in a little bit too.
Actually, that makes sense if that's the case, where we do have a, well, I don't know if we have a time jump, because I don't know about Azula, but like, because I actually thought of this, I realized, like, oh yeah, I guess Azula's not going to threaten Ty Lee with her fire. Like, I don't know, because we haven't really seen Ty Lee do anything at all.
No.
We haven't seen Ty Lee doing her circus, like being at the circus. So she's already one of Azula's posse. So she doesn't have to threaten her to join her. She's going to, her and May are going to do it anyways.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a shame. But
anyway, I will say one cool thing at the end of this episode. I have to say with Azula, Sokka and Katara, is when they both came together to realize, oh man, like the grandiose nature of we're at the Northern Water Tribe, excuse me, and who would have thought like we would have come down this path had I decided to return to the village instead of gone with Aang. Like, wow. That was the moment where I said, oh man, this really does feel like Luke in the in A New Hope.
Oh.
Like we're both, because I don't know if you remember this, but I think I mentioned a few times in like the series proper, I mentioned like Katara was supposed to be like, you know, the Luke of book one.
Mm.
And that kind of felt like, I don't know if I did feel that by the end of it, because all of a sudden she just goes like that. I mean, you could say like, okay, well, Luke did the same thing with the Death Star. All Luke did was guide a photon torpedo into a exhaust port. That's all he did. It was just the action of that. That was huge. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. This, maybe there's a bit of fudging of like, okay, she's really strong. And there was a line of like, I pick things up pretty easily. It's like, or quickly, sorry. All right. Yeah. Okay. Maybe. But
well, yeah,
I'm like, you know, I definitely see. Yeah. No, their argument about like, you know, them having grown, not as much as I'm slightly convinced. I'm not, I wish we had more episodes with them, but at the same time, I'm like, no, I guess I can see that. But in terms of action scene or fighting scene, excuse me, I'm like, I don't know about that, but that's for another tale. That's for another time.
Yeah, that's where the illusion breaks. Absolutely. They've done a good job through the writing, convincing us that she is working at it, constantly improving. Her even saying, you know, I pick things up quickly, and you would if you had like a fireball going at your head.
She's not wrong.
That all makes sense to me. It's just when we come to the actual fight scenes, the actress, I feel, can't sell the physicality of the bending. And same with A. Martinez, when the two of them are having their big fight at the end.
Okay, let's.
It is.
Yeah, okay. Okay, hang on. So let's.
Sure.
Before we get to that, let's first talk about, you know, the controversy. Let's talk about the adaptational change, I guess. So one thing that I was a little bit disappointed is that I wish that Grand was a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. not offensive, obviously, but a little bit more strict as she was in the series to, again, the thing that we, why we were rooting for Katara was the fact that all these adults, and I'm going to say it this episode as well, all the adults were just, and this episode is very good with this, all the adults were saying no. All the adults were saying, you can't do that. They had their reasons, of course. So this, they somewhat keep, well, it's different. It's different. So in place of the, I guess, patriarchy, well, okay, actually, hang on. Is this like the patriarchy ruling, or is this just like them as like the tribe deciding males are the more offensive, females heal?
Well, I don't know if it's a spoiler to say that by the time we get to the next episode, we do see that. Yeah, I mean, we get a representative of the healer here who kind of explains. I think they did a good job of showing when she's, Katara's like, what? The women can't fight. Like, that's wrong. And the woman's just kind of like, "That this is our culture. These are our ways." Like, and she seems defensive of them. But at the same time, like I don't know. I get the sense that it's like a reflex of being defensive. Like, don't insult our culture. But as we see, as we go along, well, when push comes to shove, these women do want to serve their community, whoever they can. And that limitation, they're not happy about it. So maybe that's a spoiler for the next episode. I don't know.
Again, I'm really, apologies. Yeah, I'm really pushing against bringing in stuff from the next episode. That's why I'm only, you know, focusing it on here. And so I'm willing to say, like, yeah, does Paku come across as sexist as he did in the original? I don't think as much. He seems, maybe it's the actor having some charm to him. And I'm like, that would, no, I'm convinced. Like, again, what do you think?
Yeah, I think because of the way that they emphasize the cultural element, it's almost like it's not so much that he's just a smug jerk, because I don't think there's any sense of a smug jerk here. He,
no, certainly not.
Respects her. And you can tell right from the start that he respects her. It's just like, no, these are our ways. And I don't appreciate you being critical of our ways. You know, you could serve us great by being a healer, but that's just not the role of a woman that women have here. So, yeah, it creates a different dynamic. The other Master Paku was so smug and so...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it seemed like he almost just like, yeah, didn't look down on her for being a woman. You could feel that. Or a girl. Yeah, I did want to say, because I remember in the early days of the... when this was soon to come out and they were finally doing like cast interviews and stuff, and there was that maybe a little blown out of proportion when it was Sokka the actor and the Katara one, where they were like, oh yeah, like they've taken out some of the sexist stuff with Sokka's character, and oh, there's some stuff in that show that was maybe kind of problematic. I remember there was a lot of people who were mad about, oh, Sokka's not going to have a character arc or a character anymore, and oh, they're going to remove Master Paku. And so there was a lot of buzz around, yeah, that the show wouldn't want to have anything to do with that plot line. And as always, when it comes to online people losing their minds.
Discourse.
There you go, discourse. Exactly, that's what it is. Yeah, overblown yet again. And I was happy to see that they kept that plot line here. And I think it was useful for the Katara character because, yeah, she really hasn't had much to do this season. Hasn't really had much conflict to deal with. I mean, I guess Jet, but... I mean, that was not very well handled. So to give her that opportunity to have kind of to prove her worth and to, yeah, make a difference for the women in this tribe or this city connected to her own water tribe, where she felt like she couldn't embrace her power, showing them a way to embrace their own too. I think that was really useful for her character. And it was kind of the first time that I've grown to like Katara in this series so far. And again, it's not that I've disliked her necessarily, but she was the one that I was interested the least out of the main cast. And so I was glad to see her get a little bit more of a spotlight this time around.
Finally, when she can show off the thing that she's, you know, born with. And that's the thing that I kind of liked when the first time Master Paku approached her about over, like, you know, being a waterbender. I really like that. He kind of like shows up and feels the waters a bit and kind of like makes the connection with, like, you know, kind of what I mentioned before earlier, one of the earlier episodes, about how she's not oppressed, but definitely how she was not able to bring out and or not bring out, but express herself with her bending. And I kind of like, you know, the way he was like, and it also kind of made us similar to what they did greatly with Han, kind of like made it seem like, oh, this Paku is a little different than the jerk that he was in the animated series.
Yeah, it feels more nuanced. Yeah. It, again, he doesn't feel like a smug guy who looks down on women. He just views women as having a different role in society and a useful one, one to be proud of, but just not the one that he is involved in. So, yeah, it makes him less of a villain to knock down as much as just a mind to sway. And to continue enjoying the ways that they're giving this Katara character a little bit more to do that I like, is I like the way that she was pushing at Sokka to pursue Yue, because he kept just staring at her, and she's just like, why don't you just go say something to her? She's just a girl. And I did think it was funny, because Sokka's been such a ladies' man this season so far. Like, maybe it's just because of the royalty angle, sort of royalty, that he was nervous to go after Yue. But so I enjoyed that brother-sister dynamic a little bit more this time around, too. And like you said, that near the end scene when they're talking about, like, oh, if we would have just left Aang, we would have never seen all this, and how amazing is it to be here. I thought that those scenes worked for her as well.
I again, have the nitpick, don't worry. I do wish that in this episode that Katara and Yue got to bond a little more with water bending. But
yeah, that would have been nice.
It's not to be in this episode. There's a lot of stuff, but whatever, maybe next episode. But I guess to finish off the water bending side, the water tribe side, just quickly, then we'll get to the firebending stuff.
Sure.
I like this nonlinear approach, is the fight. The fight doesn't end Batman v Superman of like, why did you say that name? No, of course not. There's no,
no.
It doesn't seem like, at least in this episode, there's no betrothed necklace. It doesn't seem like Paku was to go marry Grand. In this episode, I'm only saying that for this episode.
I never thought of the Martha connection. Oh, man, that's...
What'd you think of the fight, sir?
I appreciate what they're doing. I liked the display of the bending. I thought that they, in more theoretical terms, like, I liked seeing Master Paku impressed and everyone else being impressed too. And then after the fact, when he's like, oh, you know, I'll give you this. You've proven that you're a good bender. Then all the pupils come rushing over and they're like, wow, we've never seen anyone push him that far. How did you learn how to do the, like the ice discs that she threw? And you see this look on Master Paku's face of like, oh, like she's swaying the young. Like, this isn't really what I want to see. And so I appreciate all the utility of it and the idea of it. But I think the two actors, there was just such an awkwardness about the physicality of them moving around in a very fakey quality. And so it unfortunately didn't translate super successfully. Even though I like the result of it, I just did not think it played very well visually.
That's the same thing that I'm thinking about now with just Azula and like her, I guess, tests or trials. You know, we'll get to that. Yep. Don't worry. I'm not getting rid of that. I'm just like trying to, because again, it goes back to my whole thing with the whole dynamic nature of like moving the camera around, and even just having cameras on cranes and like showing them above or something. I mean, they have sometimes, but it's the limitations of the volume as of this era. Like, if you're listening to this, if you're listening to this like 50 years in the future right now from, you know, the time of recording, potentially like volume has been solved and you've cracked the code on it and it's become studios again. And so you can manipulate the camera in different angles. And yeah, it's like, I want to see the camera, you know, move as well. And we didn't really, like, we sort of had that with this. And as for the fight, in my opinion, I wonder how long the actors got to rehearse. You know, honestly, it's almost a one for one fight from the show. I think it's almost close, like the same thing, but
yep.
Again, maybe with like the limitations of human nature, there is a bit of a stiffness to it.
I don't know if, I also wonder if it's the costumes, because those costumes seem heavy. I don't know how flexible they are, but you need kind of a, I don't know what it is, but no, it was not working. And yeah, when we get to the Azula stuff, I think they sold it a little bit better there. I think the actress can carry a better physicality than the one playing Katara, but it is a similar limitation
We'll see. But I did like the part where, once again, similar to maybe just seeing the actor finally like have her hair let down, but I kind of like that moment when her hair is just let down.
Me too. I thought, yeah, a lot of the character stuff, the facial reactions between both of them, I thought was good. So yeah, no, I definitely agree there.
Yeah, some of the like delivery or like of the fight scene itself was a little bit, when I say stilted, I don't mean they weren't doing their parts, don't get me wrong, but just there was definitely like, oh, I mean, I praised the previous episode with the Agni Kai fights where, maybe, well, I don't know if I really did, but I know you did. I like that they expanded on it. So I kind of wish that maybe they did something more than this. I don't know. I'm just, you didn't have to do a one for one of,
yeah,
what it was, but that's neither here nor there. That's irregardless, not being a word. That's it was what it was.
Yeah, and it's interesting you comparing it to the Agni Kai duel, because both those two actors, Daniel Dae Kim and I can't remember the Zuko actor's name, but the two of
Dallas
them,
something.
Yeah, the two of them, they carried that physicality much better, especially Daniel Dae Kim. He looked great in that scene.
He, like so. I said, was trained, I say trained, but like got fitness advice from the Korean zombie himself.
Yeah, so it, in the light of that, it does make that scene feel more jarring. And again, I mean, this actress, I'm sure she hasn't had any experience working in action stuff.
Fight scenes.
A. Martinez is mainly like a character actor in dramatic stuff, soap operas, that kind of stuff, cheap horror movies. I'm sure he hasn't done too much big fantasy action. So it could have just been that the two of them just didn't really know what they were doing, and the directors didn't serve it quite well enough to really make it convincing. But
yeah, no, and this is not on the actors at all. It's just maybe the way it was staged. And again, fight scenes, not really action scenes, because everything is an action, right? It just gets, you know, misinterpreted as action scene, but I'm trying to change that as well, my own self. But
good luck.
Unfortunately, one part I wasn't pleased with was they did a lot of quick cuts where when they start doing like hand-to-hand combat, I was like, oh, the cuts.
Yes.
I got more cuts on my hand than I have right now. Like, oh, geez. Nothing on them. But anyway, one thing I'll praise. Oh, golly, I'm just looking at the scene right now when she like frozens herself. And I'm like, ew. I don't know if that like works too well for me.
Yep.
But, one thing that was what I was at least, maybe they're going with this at some point, but as of now, I don't mind there being no romance between Aang and Katara. I like, though, that when they were at the initial dinner scene in the Northern Water Tribe Fortress, I did like that it was a lot more familiar between Aang and Katara, of, you know, with the whole scene prunes, and she's like, oh, it tastes like home, or makes me feel like I'm at home.
That was another nice moment. Yeah.
It felt very like a brother and sister to me, and or that they were friends and like a family unit. It never felt romantic, especially when Aang was like, I'm sorry, Katara. I have to let you go. I'm sorry. But obviously they like, you know, like screw who came before. We're going to do things our way. And that was a big theme in this episode as well, where, especially in like, we didn't see much with Zuko, but it was, it was like mixed between Zuko and Azula in this one. But for this case, there was a lot of like, remember my whole spiel on, again, like this is a, I guess, a better young adult series. This was like the one where it's just like, we're the kids here. We're the protagonists. The adults can suck it. And he's got to stop telling us what to do. And I definitely felt that in this whole, you know, the expectations of the elders to the younger people. It's younger people, I guess, fighting back and saying like, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah. Since you mentioned Zuko and Azula, I feel like it's time that we jump over there and start talking about some of that stuff.
Place of the pirates who don't do anything. And we're never here to begin with the pirates who are not in this episode or who are not in this TV series. Mentioned once, they instead have Zhao be the one to, with the help of Lieutenant Dan or whatever his name is, blast the, you know, or rig up his little dinghy rowboat to have blasting jelly. And I like the way they did that, by the way, where he lights the fire and then it just sets off. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, and I like the continued personalization of Lieutenant G, where he's like he comes rushing over. He's really nervous and trying to protect Zuko. And as he's about to explain, like, oh, I was over on Zhao's ship and I was, and then he quickly realizes that he was doing something he shouldn't have been doing. So he's like, oh, you know, we were burning the midnight oil. We were going over fuel things. And I thought that was funny.
Agreed.
And then cutting to the shots of him just parting it up. So I appreciated continuing that dynamic of, and now he's way on Zuko's side. And then, what did they do with Zuko for the rest of this episode? Like, he just kind of shows up later on and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I swam away from that boat, Uncle, and we're working together on this. I was like, oh, they're definitely speeding through this stuff here.
It was that scene where he gets onto Zhao's ship. They suspect Lieutenant Dan was he a part of Zuko's crew, or was he one of Zhao's underlings?
Which one? Lieutenant Dan?
I think, or maybe not Lieutenant, but one of, there was a character, there was a soldier named Dan, and he was the one who went to talk to the other character or one of the other soldiers. And that's how G like her overheard like the plot to kill Zuko not to kill Zuko, but that the Fire Lord falsely is wanting to kill the prince. That's what makes him, you know, scramble away, like Skedaddle Skedoodle, and get out there before he comes a noodle, which he did anyways, because he walked right into Zhao's trap. Anyways, it's neither here nor there. But it's a pivotal scene where Zuko's like, this is the end of the line for me. He's going out on the side of Zhao's ship in the rowboat, and he's going to go to the fortress and find the Avatar. And that was like one of the best scenes in the Shyamalan movie, if you remember. And
yep, that was a good scene.
Iroh gives similar, you know, a similar performance here, I guess. And remember your breath of fire or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I forgot they never went to the breathing, like the breathing techniques. Oh, I missed that from the show, the original series.
Yeah, the alternate universe, Iroh. Yeah, delivers that speech. I still think it's funny they call him that.
Ah, the best character in that whole movie.
But I did want to highlight too, early on we're seeing as Zuko's trying to escape, and we cut to Zhao and he's giving his little speech to that underling. Oh, I thought the slimy, performance by Ken Lun, that was working for me there too. He was so, again, that smugness, he's just ballooning that ego of his.
So then Zhao obviously does the, my condolences to, General Iroh, or former General Iroh. And this time he has no choice but to be a part of the fleet. He's not like being asked in a respectful manner, in like how it was in the show. This time he's, I guess, forced, or the whole crew is forced to do this. Again, hubris is what's going to take him down. I cannot wait to see how that's going to happen. But he got super ambitious. Like, he made me believe that his next lines were like, oh, what is it you have in mind exactly, as Iroh was asking him. I thought he was going to go against the Fire Lord's wishes and actually say like, there is no need for a Fire Lord. And it's like, I will be the next Fire Lord or something like that. I'm like, okay, the cojones on this guy. Like, first, like, he's getting like... like I said, like, what does power do to a man? It's like, you're watching this exactly, like, this entire, like, first season, for pit's sakes. And
yeah,
it's brilliantly done. But I'm like, I was literally half expecting to see this happen and just be like, the guy's not really fought at all. He's just using political power to like move up the ranks, and he's now saying like, I will become king. It's like, oh my goodness, it's like Macbeth. But I guess not as well from the bottom to the top, but like, wow.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's just that gaining that dominion over Zuko too, of being like, oh, you know, these royals are up there in their palace, but you know, they're no better than me. Look at this little Weasley kid. Like, I can take this. I can usurp that power.
Yep. If they're using the library scroll, I'd be interested to see how they're like gonna find that out. Because one, they haven't set up Tui and La right now, so I have no idea how that's gonna resolve if they're going there. But they didn't introduce them this episode. Let's see, other than Zuko's face being not as blasted as it should have been and him going off. Oh, okay. So to finish this off, we're going to talk about Azula.
Hmm.
I guess in place of the two old ladies, I forget their names. Low and something. They have. I keep getting them mixed up with the fish, the ocean and the moon spirit.
Yep.
I don't know if you remember their names off the top of it. I'll probably remember it tomorrow afternoon while I work.
No, I've been trying to think about it. Yeah, I can't remember.
In place of them, maybe it's these two just trainers, I guess, male trainers who look nothing alike. And it seems as though, yeah, Ozai is really like pushing her. As she's pushed herself, I guess she's wanting this. She's like, I demand an audience. Well, she doesn't want, does not say this, but it's like, I demand an audience with the Fire Lord to show him my, like, you know, talents and, you know, all my training that I've done over Aang, where I should be the protagonist of the series. And she's going up against these, like, captured earthbending prisoners, which is sadistic, but also makes sense, I guess. It's not the worst idea. But she's feeling down, she's in the slumps, she's you know, like, oh, this isn't fair. Again, I feel it's that fear of God that we saw in the last episode of, what if I don't be better than what happened to Zuko, I'm toast, literally.
Yep.
I'll say this, it's somewhat a nitpick and maybe a negative, but I wish they explained how and why. Like, how she was able to just do lightning. Because, I mean, maybe in that for, like, sure. Did I need to have an explanation of how she was able to do it in when she was first introduced in the show, like the original series? I think it was the charisma of the way they portray, like, the way they animated her. I think the way she's portrayed, I didn't need an explanation of, like, oh, especially with the dialogue of how cold and calculating she is, it's like, okay, no, I can sort of see, like, her being able to do this. And then Iroh explains it later on, and bitter work of how it works. So I'm just like, so how did she all of a sudden go from frustration to I can bend lightning?
Well, we've seen hints of it. It was clearly built as a reveal. So we know that she's been studying it at least. But I'm assuming that we'll get more of those details in the next season.
Probably, yeah.
I'm assuming we're going to flesh out more of her background.
Probably. So just at this point, I'm just like, okay, where did you all of a sudden learn this?
Well, again, they've already set it up. So I don't know about quite all of a sudden. I thought it was well done for what it was. And as a way to finally prove that, you know, why am I stuck here just twiddling my thumbs when I could be out there doing some proving that I'm worthy of being the heir. And I also wondered if she just doesn't want to get the heck out of there because she's already seen that Ozai's been giving her those couple knocks, like, hey, don't be.
Uh-huh.
So she's like, I got to get as far away from this guy so I don't get a burn on my face, too.
So it's almost self-exile in the way where she, again, undergoes the same, like, well, not exile, of course, but now it's like a test. It's the royal test. Let me be the one to go out and find the Avatar for you instead of your son.
Yeah.
And I presume there was some, I'm not going to say groupies, that's wrong of me to say, but there were some, I guess, extras behind Mei and Ty Lee. And I get the sense that either Azula's, those will be a part of the attack squad, or she's going to bring Yuya and archers along with her.
I can see that. Yeah, and I'll admit there was a number of, we've had it this whole season, I never much cared for the scenes with the Mei and Ty Lee because a lot of them feature exactly what you mentioned earlier, where it's just people just standing and talking.
They're like, that's what, and again, not on the actors or anything like that, but just the direction, yeah, and the idea to say, and the staging of just stand there. It's like, I'm not even angry at the cast members anymore. I'm just like, are you kidding me? Give them something to do. Give them, like, they're just standing there as props, and they're not props. Don't worry. I'm just like, oh, it's frustrating to say that because I don't mean that against the actors now, but I'm just happy that I finally have figured out and realized what my feelings are over this. I'm just like, I'm sure you have them there, but they're like just a Greek choir by this point.
Oh, they are. Yeah, they don't really even feel like characters on their own at this point. They do just feel like, yeah, prop confidants. So that's a shame. That's I hope that those actors can carry a little bit more physicality as we go into the second season. I really hope that everyone kind of gets some training so that they can be a little bit more believable.
Okay, well, it's not just the, I don't want to So like, oh, you actors, you should do better at your trade. No, I'm not gonna go there. That's not like, you know, they're only meant to, you know, pretend and make it, you know, the fight scenes believable, and or at least, you know, fantastical, whatever you want to say, like make us believe that, you know, we're actually seeing like something that humans can achieve far greater than what we actually can accomplish just with our fists or with our hands. So it's like, you know, they're doing the best they can. I get that, but at the end of the day, it's now becoming direction as well, and you know, so it's not just them. I can, you know, well, point my finger at, but there's no reason to point my finger at them for that.
No, these are young folks. I'm sure a lot of them haven't been involved with any sort of fight training, and I think you can see that. I mean, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but if they have the chance, they know that they're going to be making those next two seasons. If they could integrate that as part of their prep for the show, I think that could improve some of this stuff into the second season.
That's fair. I don't want to put all the blame on the actors for it being like, oh, it's like, come on. Like, I think some of these guys probably are good with just, you know, a more down to earth stuff, maybe slice of life series that, you know, and maybe some dramas or something like that, but nothing on this level of like fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, look at Timothy Chalamet in the Dune Part 2. He said, you know, after making that first movie, a lot of it was just kind of drama and more just him learning to come to grasp with a more physical world. He said he put on some weight, he started training, and especially for that big knife fight at the end, that they were putting in weeks and weeks of training for that because he wanted to make sure that that really had the impact. If it was just kind of like he showed up and was kind of like, okay, you know, and again, not to knock these actors. I mean, a lot of these are really young folks, you know, I'm sure they didn't have that kind of prep time to do that with this. But since they'll have the time before the second season, maybe that'd be useful to make some of this stuff more believable as we keep going.
And we'll see. And that's not on just the, again, not to, don't worry, I agree with you on that, but it also comes down to the direction, the directors and producers too. Make that so.
Yeah.
Because if the actors are willing to put in the time, that's great. But if the producer's like, no, 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 we can't do that. If this is like Iron Fist all over again, how ironic. Well, that's going to be a problem, given that the actors there didn't have almost any time to do like, you know, fight choreography training.
Oh, wow.
And it definitely shows. And the lead actor got so much backlash for literally like only having like apparently 30 minutes of training.
Oh, man.
And then everybody, like, again, allegedly grain of salt, but having little, you know, fight choreography training and then doing the moves that he was instructed to do. And apparently that show was mismanaged. So
yeah,
it's a legend by this point Netflix kind of dropping the ball on that one.
Yeah, no, I've definitely heard negative things and I never did get around to watching it, but I guess we should probably get around to watching that finale as we, yeah, I think we've picked this one mostly clean, I think.
It sounds like I would be a little bit more positive on this one than I was leading on to be, but I still stand where I stand and say that I will still be out. Say my negative is that this goes by a little bit too quickly. I feel like there's enough here for like two episodes, maybe just to draw it out, but I see why they had to like combine these both together to just like speed us off. It's just like, I kind of wanted time to breathe, but no breathing room because we're about to hit the finale.
Yeah, agreed. There's, again, I still am also in the low feeling it, but that's not to say that this was not filled with a lot of good stuff. It's just, I feel like, yeah, that some of the good stuff needed more time to breathe. And I wish that it would have had that. And I guess a similar complaint that we had initially with this, the original three-parter. So, yeah, unfortunately, I didn't necessarily fix that, but...
And wouldn't you know it, they now have decided to turn and cut this one down a bit and a few pegs as well. Oops.
But, still definitely some good stuff and still curious to see how it all comes together in the final episode. So, yeah, I guess we'll see what happens there. But I guess that brings us around to the end. Thank you, Isaac, for joining me for yet another discussion of this Avatar live-action program. And would you like to take us home? Carry us out of here.
Thank you, my friend. When you, the listener, or comment leaver, or regulation listener as well, when you become an adult after having defied and made yourself worth, made your mark in the world. And you've gone against all the old guard and all the elders. What will happen when you become the elder? And what will you say to the younger generation? I suppose the cycle will always continue. Till next time, peace. We were actually, well, funny story with that. Okay, maybe, yeah, never mind. Just, we were looking forward to Prey. I say looking forward, but we were anticipating Prey for a long time. So would you recommend that? Because
Oh God, yes.
Oh.
It's the second best Predator movie by far. It's great. It is really great.
Better than the second one?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll give it a watch. It's, you know.